Blog Talk Radio.
Wonderful program today. We're going to be talking about this ISIS threat versus our Muslim citizens that live here in the United States. What's all the fuss? What's all the big hoopla? Donald Trump has said that none of them should come here into the United States. Well, I'm at the barbershop, and we're going to be talking about real things that are happening today, and I have with me, of course, the one and only barbershop owner that's overlooking downtown, Mr. Tyrone Spraggs. He's on the program with me today, and we're so glad to have him. And he's going to be telling it like it is, but we're so glad just to have you online. And by the way, if you have friends or relatives or anybody that you'd like to invite them to listen to the program today or ask their questions, it's not all about us doing all the talking now. It's also about listening to what you have to say. Give them a call, and here's the number, 347-850-1598. And we'll be more than glad. We got wonderful technicians that are equipped to know what to do to entertain your call, even screen your call. So you've got no worries. And you just call in here, and we'll be able to talk with you. But, Mr. Spraggs, glad to have you.
Thanks for having me, sir.
Hey, you know there's a lot of going on. There. A lot of people are afraid. They're fearful about the ISIS threat. I had international correspondent Frank Jackson to break it down, but I want to break it down to the street level now about the ISIS threat. Donald Trump has got people all up in the air saying that no Muslim should enter into the country. A lot of people were just wondering what to do, and now they've got people thinking that all Muslims are radicalized. And in the Quran, the 5th chapter, verse 33, it talks about the infidels and against Allah. So what do you think, man? What about this terror threat and all this here?
Well, Ms. Macklin, my train of thought is this here, huh? Sitting back watching an idiot like Donald Trump, it don't surprise me because, you know, only 65 years ago, his parents was worse than that. So you understand that slavery and the Great Depression and all that.
Now, break that down. What do you mean was worse than that?
Well, you know, back then, I mean, even my mother and my parents itself, you know.
Okay, the terrorists.
Yes, and I grew up in a little town of Farmer, Virginia, which 25 miles away, they had a compound. A Muslim compound, which got raided maybe 15, 16 years ago. And he used to come to the barbershop. You know, we never knew that he was a terrorist or anything like that. I mean, first time I heard of him when I saw it on the news. And which relates, you know, goes back to, you know, what is a terrorist? I think a terrorist is a person who scares anyone. For instance, not too long ago, at Sandy Hook, at one of the elementary schools, you know, we had a young Caucasian white male, as we say, went into a school and killed 26 people. And it seems to me that it seems like he wasn't singled out as a terrorist, but anybody who commits a heinous crime such as that caliber is considered a terrorist. But, you know, sometimes people are getting slapped on the wrist and they would say, you know, oh, he's just having a bad day. You know, he come from a middle class, you know, he live in a $300,000 house. You know, you're a fire potatoes to life, but, you know, if everybody would look at each and every individual as the same, that would have never occurred in the first place.
Well, Mrs. Bright, let me ask you this question. Now, what happened in Paris, as you know, was real. Those were basically a lot of nationalist homegrown terrorists. What happened right here in the United States, San Bernardino, California, a soft target, a man and a woman.
Well, you know, in this world, you know, we are individual people. So when we go out and commit a heinous crime, you know, we need to be dealt with in a way according to the law, you know. And but people here in America, you know, we can who are the Americans? You know, I don't know. I know where from my education and my philosopher that, you know, the black people was brought here as slaves, so therefore this is not our word. I first heard that the Indians owned the country. But then again, you know, I don't know how they came to power. My only sense of direction without looking into a book, if I'm dealing with reality, what happened, the guns are one of the power that created all the animosity amongst the world. Because you know what? When everybody was born, we all come from a woman. So therefore, we had to learn our environment and cultivate the land. It was Jehovah, Allah, God, or whoever you serve, all the same one. But these extremists, these are people just, I don't know, maybe something hurt them dearly. You know, not too long ago, you know, the United States dropped a bomb on one of the hospitals in one of those countries. And the only thing they really could say to these people say that they were sorry. You know, I understand that. It's not the first time that mistake happened. People such as ourselves, when we love our family and our children, you know, and our loved ones, and like 9/11, which was, I think, one of the worst disasters I ever lived through, it made us feel mad, made us feel angry. But in the same token, you know, the same thing happened over in Iraq. So those people feel those type of ways. So, you know, you kill somebody, mother, brother, and sister, they're not going to be peaceful. You know, back in the 1950s and 60s, when black people was fighting for our independence, and they always say, you know, the white man always say, you turn the other cheek. You know, today, in this world, anybody turn the other cheek, because you know what? Turn the other cheek sometimes, they rip that cheek off and bite the other one off. So what do you have? I mean,
so basically what you're saying is that white supremacy shapes who is a terrorist and who's not.
Yeah. You know, I mean, white people went all over the world, man, and committed crimes, you know, that these people know. These people just not attacking the United States for nothing or these countries for nothing. It's like in Paris, and I did a little study on that. Maybe I'm wrong. They allow a lot of Muslims in Paris, but in a certain part of Paris, you know, people are being treated just like they treat African Americans. You know, and like you said, you always got young people coming up, and, you know, they hear stories from their ancestors and their grandparents, how people, you know, done things like Hitler done to the Jews, you know, which a lot of the American dictators done to African Americans, which are still doing today. We have a different form of slavery now. And
right.
And that is, if you lock the father up, if you lock the son up, it means the woman don't have nobody to look forward to, you know. So therefore, you start the growth of the African American population. We're taking all this money to fight this war, and we got people starving here in America. You know, it takes $56,000, $30,000 a year to house an inmate. Instead of to teach them to help make this country better, we destroy it. We destroy the ones who we think is less fortunate enough.
So basically, the race game is being played.
Of course.
And why is it that we allow white supremacy to set the world standards, global, not only from a domestic standpoint? Look up what's happening up in Chicago now.
Well,
the white man tried to play his game, but it didn't work.
Well, you know.
An innocent young man was shot 16 times.
Yeah, but you know, at least now we hear about it. What about the ones, you know, that...
Thank God for the video.
Yeah, for the video, you know, they go home and eat,
now,
drink wine and eat cheese.
Well, I heard this. Some people say it wasn't a dash cam on the car, it was a Burger King video.
Well, you know, sometimes...
Did you hear that?
See, sometimes, you know, and when you're in control of something, like organizations, they do trauma to the ground, you know.
Yeah, trauma to the ground.
But... they gonna cover one another. I'm a black man myself, you know. Sometimes we turn the other way when we see something when it's the opposite person that's doing it, you know. Just such as that in the ghettos, you know, when the police come in, you know, we're not gonna tell the police what's going on. But you know, some people do.
So in today's world, then I'm just gonna be real with you, because our program today is about the Muslim citizenry and the threats. Are you afraid of Muslims?
Why would I be afraid of Muslims? They've been around me all the time. The people who I'm afraid of are the people who I see every day.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you are afraid of white supremacy.
To a certain degree, if I see somebody who's in the white structure, I just get away from them. You know, I mean, my thing is not to entertain them.
Mm.
You know, it's just not to entertain them because you know what I mean? How can we judge one another? What makes you think you're different from killing somebody with a bomb and to hang somebody?
Wow.
And to rape somebody.
Same thing.
To lock a person up for the rest of their life.
Can you talk about the lynchings?
Yeah, don't talk about
it. It was real.
But see, when things happen to us in our country, then the 1% that got all the money, they scared. See,
yeah, they scared.
See, being poor is the greatest thing to happen to a human being because you're equal.
Mm-hmm.
But see, when you got a lot of money, they
right.
keep being adapted to what's going on. You know, they
scared.
But see, people
shield yourself.
See, the people
that's why Jesus says more blessed to give than to receive.
Exactly. So the people in the ghetto, you know, we sit back and watch it, you know, we look at it in a total different aspect. We're fighting a war in our own community. So something abroad, you know, we say, you know what? We don't have no say so in a political thing in the ghetto because they say what do you call it, second class?
Yeah, that's right.
But,
well, let's switch to the presidential race. I think Trump's going to get the nomination.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't surprise them anything because, you know what, I mean, the two Bushes,
that's right.
They won.
They pulled it off.
And the father started the war and the son went back to finish it.
Wow.
And I hope we don't have a third Bush because, you know what?
Making it plain.
Yeah, make it plain. Ain't cut no corners. See, if you cut corners, I mean, you lied to yourself.
Wow. So do you believe Hillary's going to get it?
It's a possibility, but you know when it comes to government, the Bible always speaks of evil. That's why they say you know you shouldn't discuss
who
in a place of business. Politicians.
You ain't talking about Bill Clinton now, is you?
Oh, Bill Clinton.
He was called the first black president.
And you know, and I think that's so ignorant. Bill Clinton he wouldn't want to be black because if he wanted to be black, he'd have done more for black people instead of locking them up.
Did you hear about what the Arkansas police was doing down there, the black folks framing them?
Yeah.
I'm going to send you the video if you don't have it.
Yeah, they're framing, but you know what? You
heard about that?
Yeah, but let me tell you another thing that, you know, just
they were Klansmen.
Just went away. But check this out. It's from a legal analyst. They had a judge, I think, it might be incorrect. I think it was in Pennsylvania, where they was locking up the juveniles to get this money for something, I think. If anybody here, they know what I'm talking about. They locked a whole lot of black kids up in the juvenile system, the judge. I don't even think he got a day in jail.
Really?
I don't think he got a day in jail.
Where was that at?
I think it was in Pennsylvania. Maybe I'm wrong, but somebody know about it. If you hear me, you know about it.
Pennsylvania?
Yeah. The same thing they did in 1985 in the 80s when those academic with crack cocaine hit. And, you know, back then a lot of people didn't have jobs, so a lot of people sold drugs just to get by. Some people sold drugs just for the glamour. But some of us sold drugs and stuff like that to put groceries in the house, you know, to get the things that we need, not because we wanted to sell drugs, because, you know, we were disenfranchised from day one.
You're talking about underclass.
Yeah, underclass. I don't even think they changed that in the...
Well, that still exists today. It's just people don't pay attention to the upper class, what they do. Wall Street is very much alive.
But the same thing.
You know what I'm saying? Wall Street doing the same thing again.
Yeah. Like that video we watched from elementary to prison.
Yeah.
It's a genocide. And,
yeah.
And like you said, the people
ain't burning the prison.
Yeah, the people ain't building that stuff. Just be, but like at the hotel, they build nothing. Like you said, they're stocked in like cattle. And if you go in the penitentiary too smart in the penitentiary, they have to set up so somebody kill you in the penitentiary.
That's right.
They ain't no different. How you think drugs get in the penitentiary?
So what you're saying is we're living in some dangerous times. People just don't know what time it is.
And you tell me this. The CCA, the private prison industry. Don't you know you got more drugs in the penitentiary than you have on the street? How does it get in there? Somebody ain't doing their job. You understand what I'm saying? These drugs ain't getting into the United States by all these illegal immigrants. there's people in political power which bring those drugs in here. And like you said, go to a black community, what you do? You lock them up, one kill the other one.
It's a game. It's a way to make money.
The son don't have a father to look up to.
It's a way to make money.
And that's why now.
Destruction. Destruction of the culture.
You know, when we was coming up in the 50s and 60s, you didn't see a lot of black homosexuals.
But you know what I'm president of, don't you?
Yeah, I understand that.
See, Harriet Tubman Culture Center. That says it all.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay? And I'm talking to a business owner, Mr. Spraggs. We're two successful black men who happen to be men, period, who are citizens of the United States living in Harrisonburg. This is going to be one of the greatest cities in the world.
Well, you know.
You believe that?
It could be, but, you know, like they said in the.
But you're here.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm here.
But like they say, but like they said.
Aren't you doing great things?
I'm trying. I'm still working up. I'm still.
Who else got a mobile barber shop in town?
Well, you know that.
You cut hair in there, don't you?
Yeah.
You got a license for that, don't you?
Yes, sir.
You're welcome. If you're listening, you have relatives and friends, they're welcome to come and get the haircut.
Anybody can come. White, anybody. Black, Chinese. If you bring a pet in there, they can sit in my chair and not bite me. I'll do that, too. It doesn't matter.
So it's all inclusive.
You know what? My grandfather worked for $9 a week to raise him and his wife and four children.
Yes.
You know, and he worked like a dog. And the only time I saw my grandfather smile when he saw his grandchildren out there running and playing freely. You know, because when he was young, he couldn't run out there and do that. You know, he had to get up and work, go fetch water, you know, go plow.
That was a real deal.
Yeah,
and look at you. You carrying on the tradition.
So
what are we doing on our time, by the way? Don't take it off the network.
17 minutes.
Oh, it's old, man. So we got clear time.
But, you know, my mother, you know, I mean, she's a wonderful person. She raised three children by herself, you know, and we have more than respect. And, you know, we wore church clothes out in the project and stuff like that. And I guess we kind of stood out a little bit because, you know, we were very clean children, you know, well-mannered children. But mm-hmm. We just two little country kids that that moved from a little small area into the town area where, you know, we was more advanced than the most people that lived in the five counties around us. And I always wanted to be something. I say, you know, when I grow up, what I'm really going to be, I don't really know. I didn't know at the time, but as I got older, like you were saying to me, you know, the barbers that you knew in your community always had nice things, always dressed, well-mannered, you know, everybody in the community knew them. So, and like I said, you know, I'm not the greatest person in the world. You know, I went to prison myself. I mean, I'm not ashamed of that. There was a time in my life where I was dumb and ignorant, and I didn't have the guidance. So I had time to sit back in prison and reflect on myself and say, you know what? Even though, you know, you can be 40, 50, 60, maybe 60, 70 years old, you know, and you don't have a father in your life, I mean, it didn't really set me back as an individual. But, you know, at the age of 40, sit back and think, you know, what would have my life been like if my father would have been in my life? You know, and like you said, it's like a dream. He might have been in your life. You might have been in a worse situation than what you had. So, you know, I had men around me and family members and things like that, you know, that, you know, would give a kid a quarter, you know.
How did you get interested in the trade?
Well, you know, my mother, one Christmas, bought me and my brother a pair of cheap clippers. And we started cutting each other hair, you know, and we started cutting our friends' hair. So it was something that, you know, during that time in the 80s, man, that when all the rappers was coming out and everything was funky fresh, you know. And we just came in the era where, you know.
To identify.
You know, so we knew if we cut hair, we could at least get $3 a haircut. You know, but I had my own.
Money in that pocket.
Yeah, you know, just $3 back then. You know, it was a store called Cold Store where we would walk. You know, we lived in the project. But the project was brand new, so it was like we lived in condos.
Mm.
You know, it was brand new.
Yeah, brand new.
Had cable, you know, stuff. we didn't have much, you know, we had our little food stamps. You know,
living the life.
Yeah, had our food stamps and the little
in the project.
$25-$50 rent, you know, we didn't know.
That's right.
You know, like you say, you go back for my grandparents, I mean, they only paid $2 a month for rent. So, you know, and just I was that kid that always stood out, man. You know, my mother told me a couple of times, she said, to my friends, Tyrone, you know, you always just bring strangers home to the house, introduce that. This is my mom. And she said, I brought a lady, a Jehovah Witness, Miss White. And she said, I came home and I was holding this lady's hand and, said, came through the door, you know. I introduced her to my mom. And stuff like that. So she just said, you know, when she talk about us, me and my brother and my sister, you know, she loved her children, man. That's all she had, man. And she's just the greatest, man. And but when she talk about me, I see her, she light up. Because there's always something coming at the end. I had it with Tyrone's, but, but you know, but so I asked her one day, you know, I always, being children, you always say, you know, you wonder who you know, you always say, who's just the best child, this and that.
Yeah. Some people call it favorite.
Yeah, favorite. But my mother, she never said anything like that.
Yeah.
As children, I might say, you know, my brother was a favorite.
Mm-hmm. Blah, blah.
So one day I asked her a question, and I said, Mom, we was growing up. I said, what do you think of your children? She said, I don't know. She said, Tyrone, I knew you. If something was to happen to me, that you would be the strongest out of all your brothers and sisters to keep the family going. So I just never thought of it that way, why she was so tough on me.
Mm.
You know, when somebody's tough on you, you think somebody is, you know, they're treating you different.
Yeah.
Because, see, I was a kid that grew up without a father. My father passed away.
Mm-hmm.
So just being a child, so I had to find somebody that can be a father figure to me in my own mind and a leader for me. So I knew everybody who had their business, you know, they had family, children, you know.
Right.
You see, I do family things and stuff like that. So, you know, I got to find myself. I can't worry about depending on my brother's, my sister's father.
You certainly have, because you're definitely self-supporting, self-sustaining, and a businessman, and just a wonderful individual to be in a leadership capacity with in this city. And I think there's more Tyrones and Stans that are out there. We just got to reach out to them.
But it ain't more Tyrones, Frank.
Oh, the only one that I respect.
I just joking.
You threw that curveball. Well, your gifts and your talents, they don't belong to you. They belong to others. And when you cut them heads, it shows. So I think we can pass it on. But the thing about it is that this program today, we want to talk about this, the threat, because I know a lot of Muslim men, women, boys and girls that are great people. And let me make this plain. America is not a melting pot. I'll say it again. America is not a melting pot. It's a toss salad.
A volcano.
It's a toss salad. My brother said volcano. So we want to allow the richness of who we are as individuals to flow. And that's what the volcano is all about, lava flowing.
That's right. Well said, Mr. Macklin. Appreciate you having me today. And it's an honor and pleasure to sit here and speak with the honorable young man, Mr. Macklin. He's one of my mentors. Just my little small existence around him, he taught me to think three times instead of one time before I react. So, you know, I've learned a lot of things from Mr. Macklin. Hopefully in the future we'll keep on corresponding and being who we are, being real brothers. And like you said, I also like to say, you know,
if you need a haircut, you can come to Sprague's Barbershop. He is mobile. You can come on the inside or he can come to where you are. He's there. So you know, we just want to thank you for our program today. And this has been Stan Macklin and Tyrone Spraggs, owner of Spraggs Barbershop, on Straight Talk today, talking about reality, things that can help you to help yourself. We're about job creation. And if you get to know that creating a beloved community is serious, we need peacemakers. We need nation builders, and all being anchored in justice, peace, and love. And so we know what it is to love, to accept, and to forgive, because some of the most vicious things that was done to us as black men in this country is just unmentionable.
And we forgave them.
And we forgave them. So come on, let's work together to make a difference and build a better world. This has been Stan Macklin with Straight Talk. Mr. Spraggs, any last thing you'd like to say?
We all preachers.
Thank you so much. And remember, it's not the uplook, but the outlook that makes a difference, that will cause you to wonder, can you take it? But you can take it if you can make it. You can make it if you can take it. And so remember, it's not really the outlook, but the uplook that makes a difference. Peace.
Thanks. Okay,